might be free if they value freedom and defend it as they ought. Sam Adams, April 19th, 1775, after hearing the first shots fired at Lexington. Welcome back to the American Revolution podcast. We're up to episode 10, Samuel Adams. We spent last week talking about the Boston Tea Party, an event made famous by the Sons of Liberty. They are a group made famous by Samuel Adams. So I thought for this week's episode we would do a character study, and I figured we would go with Samuel Adams. Always a good decision. Sam Adams was born the son of a prosperous Boston merchant, also named Samuel Adams, and his wife, Mary Fifield Adams, on September 22, 1722. Sam Adams Sr., besides being a businessman, was also a deacon in the Congregationalist Church. The younger Adams inherited his father's Puritan virtues of honesty, austerity, and also a critical attitude toward British royal officials. It was probably for good reason. In 1739, Deacon Adams was involved in a failed land speculation project due to the Massachusetts royal governor. Samuel Adams would follow in his father's footsteps and join the Boston Caucus Club. Now, this was a radical political club with considerable influence on the city. Samuel Adams, though, doesn't really become known in the political world until the 1760s and the colonial dispute over the Sugar Act. Sam Adams was actually asked to draft some talking points for Boston Assembly members who were meeting with other Massachusetts colonists for a Massachusetts Assembly in which they would talk about the Sugar Act and how to deal with it. It is here, at this assembly, from the words of Sam Adams, that the phrase, "no taxation without representation," is coined. Though his political reputation is on the rise, his financial situation is at a low. You see, Sam Adams' problem was that he cared too much about political issues, so he was continuously in financial struggle. John Adams would even write of his cousin that he was too attentive to the public and not enough to himself or to his family. In 1765, he'll be elected to the Massachusetts House of Representatives. And of course, between the time of 1765 and 1774, Sam Adams would organize the resistance to British rule. He would bring the fight to the Parliament by fighting all the taxes that they levied against the colonists. He advocated for novel tactics of resistance, such as trade boycotts. We've seen this many, many times with him, that when the British levied a tax, the colonists would do one of two things. They would outright protest and boycott said product that was being taxed, or my more favorite one, they would just go to smuggling the stuff in. Sam Adams was also a big supporter of having a united colonial society. He felt that the problems and taxes being levied against the colonists was not strictly a Massachusetts or Virginia problem, but a problem for all 13 colonies, and thus they should unite. In 1768, he will write a circular letter to the other colonies. This forced the British to intercede because they wanted to stop the unification of the colonies, or at least the radicals in those colonies, against the British crown. So in 1772, Adams helped organize the Committee of Correspondence. Now, we talked about them last week. The Committees of Correspondence were small groups of influential people in each colony that got together to talk about issues for and within the colony itself. For most of Sam Adams' career as a radical patriot, he was sought after by the British for being a rabble-rouser. In 1765, he is accused of inciting mobs that attacked the governor's home. In 1770, he is believed to be the one behind the disorder that led to the Boston Massacre. Now, when we talked about the Boston Massacre, I had said that I felt for the British soldiers. They were put into a situation that they could not really see a way out of. And luckily, for the support of someone like John Adams, who came to their aid, the issue, of course, is still a split one. You can't fully blame the British soldiers, also like you can't fully blame Sam Adams. So to say that he was behind the disorder that caused the Boston Massacre, I feel is a little far-fetched. Adams defended the Patriots in print, but denied ever having something to do with it. No matter the case, it is hard to believe that he had nothing to do with the Boston Tea Party. As we talked last week, there isn't any direct connection to Adams and the party itself, except for when he gave the speech at the Old South Meeting House. He said, "This meeting can do nothing further to save the country." Now, for the longest time, historians thought this was a signal for the Sons of Liberty to go to the harbor and dump the tea. Now, historians in the more present day, like myself, believe that this is just a strange coincidence. I don't believe that Sam Adams actually organized a signal system to tell the colonists or the Sons of Liberty when it's time to go dump the tea. I think they heard it, and I think they took it upon themselves to dump the tea because, well, what was the point? If the meeting wasn't going to solve the issue, we might as well get rid of the issue, which, of course, is the tea. Sam Adams is, of course, invited to the First Continental Congress in 1774, along with his cousin. With the ending of the First Continental Congress, he'll return to Boston, and he'll continue the fight against British Parliament and their taxes and laws. In the early morning of April 19, 1775, he and John Hancock will narrowly escape capture from the British coming through Lexington. They're on their way to the powder stores in Concord. So he gets out of the fight and is once again invited to serve in the Second Continental Congress. Now, Sam Adams had gained such notoriety that when his cousin is sent to France with Benjamin Franklin in 1776, the French court was disappointed because it wasn't the more famous Samuel Adams, and it was his cousin John Adams. After the war starts, Sam Adams plays less of a prominent role. He is a signer in the Declaration of Independence, and in 1779 he helped draft the Constitution for Massachusetts, which was adopted a year later. In 1781, he'll retire from the Continental Congress with the war winding down, and he would be a supporter of the minimal central government. During Shays' Rebellion, he supports the government use of force to put it down. And from 1789 to 1793, he served as a lieutenant governor of Massachusetts, after which he served as governor from 1793 to 1797, before he will officially retire from politics. He will live in Boston until his death on October 2nd, 1803. Now, as far as a character study goes, this one's a little bit shorter than most that we're going to have in the future. It's far shorter than that of John Adams. And that's not to say anything against Sam Adams, because he's one of my favorite founding fathers. It just has everything to do with the timeline of events. We know minimal about his early life. We discussed his early childhood, a little bit about his father, and then we talked about his very prominent role in the beginning years of the Revolution, before the war actually begins. But it's that time frame of the war years between 1783 that he has a limited role in the actual war itself. So that's going to conclude this episode. I want to leave everyone off with a recommendation, and once again, it's one of those books that is on my to-do list to read, but you only have so much time to read in a day. And so I'm going to do this one sort of on the good faith recommendation, and it's Sam Adams, Father of the American Revolution by Mark Poles. Now, like I said, I haven't got a chance to read it yet, and I'm sure I'll have more opportunities to recommend a Samuel Adams book in the future, but I wanted to leave everyone with that. Next week, we go full tilt back into the story where we'll talk about the Intolerable Acts. And we are just going to be that much closer to the beginning of the war. So until next time, everyone have a good week, and as usual, keep your powder dry.